It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woo-hooer, a hand clapper, a high-fiver? I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus. Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
You know, I've always questioned the biblical angels that come to help or threaten us. We can think of Gabriel or Michael or Lucifer, the fallen angel. But in today's program, we're going to look at a historical group of angels who came and assisted not only the figures in the Bible, but have been documented in their interactions with different kings and other important people down through the ages. Are these beings on a realm close to the human physical experience, a realm that we are born into, and these beings are here to help? Today's program is The Ancient Tradition of Angels with my returning guest, Norman D. Ellis. All this and more today on Earth Ancients. For Saturday, May 6, 2023, this is Earth Ancients. I'm your host, Cliff Dunning. Hey, hi, how are you? Hope you're doing well on this Saturday. Welcome to Earth Ancients. When we talk about angels, we can immediately go to the Bible and other religious traditions and think of these beings as these winged creatures who are summoned by the Lord God. Yahweh and other religious traditions have names for their gods. But today we're going to talk about the possibility that these beings come from a dimension that is aligned with our own. And not only do they come to assist us, they come to present lessons. They come to, in many ways, help us live this human existence. Now, it's funny because when you think of angels, you don't really think of anything other than the winged creatures. But there is evidence and there are reports of beings that are considered angels who are able to pass through into our dimension and then back into wherever they're located. There hasn't really been a study that I have found where research was conducted to discover where the beings known as angels come from, if it is, you know, a trick of light, if it, you know, no one's really substantiated angels until my program today. And we're talking with somebody who has done some significant research and written a book on ancient traditions of angels right up to the present time. And I'm fascinated in this topic simply because as somebody who is a regular meditator who follows some of the Hindu traditions like yoga, I just mentioned meditation, these other realms are places that are you're able to contact and move into if you're interested in that. I haven't been really interested in angels. Although I've had, as a program director over the years, people who have written extensively about angels, and I would say up to, oh, I don't know, 5 or 6 years ago, the angel phenomenon was pretty strong. People were communing with their angels. There were people who changed their names from their birth name to given angel names, and I think it gets kind of crazy at that point. But there's something about this that is significant, and there are reports of people calling to their angels in times of distress. Again, if you're a religious person, you may have been taught that that angels come in all shapes and sizes and experiences. But we don't have, and this is what's interesting about today's program, we don't really have an understanding of the different levels of angels. We know that there's major angels like Michael and Gabriel, and of course, Luther, the fallen angels. And we got to be careful not to fall into the Nephilim, the fallen angels who are featured in a number of different authors' works. And then we can also cross into the Zechariah Sitchin Nephilim, which is a whole different animal. So we got to be careful on that one. But today we are going to discuss the historical interactions between angelic beings and question if these beings are part of our physical reality. How did they get there? What is the basis of their interaction? Is there a hierarchy of these beings? And how do they fall within the human condition? Do we, I mean, because some people report that there are angels around us all the time, that there are angels that are assigned to us, and they are there for you to call when you need comfort, when you need guidance. We've had some people on this program who confess that they have called into the angelic realm for support, for help when they are not well, for help in decision-making. So that's kind of interesting when you think of it like that. They're not just there to call when you're having a problem. Perhaps they're there to attend to questions of important questions, decision-making, lifestyle, so forth and so on. So there's a great deal to consider when we start talking about angels. So today's program is with my guest, author Norman D. Ellis. And we've had Norman D. on the number of times. She has chronicled a number of ancient historical events. And we had her previously talking about ancient Egyptian traditions, oral traditions. And the new book that she's written is called The Ancient Traditions of Angels, The Power and Influence of Sacred Messengers. This is our program today. Each year, Earth Ancients heads to Mexico for a private tour of some of the most intriguing ruins from the Maya and other Mesoamerican cultures. This year, November 10th through the 17th, we'll be heading to Vera Hermosa in southern Mexico to see the site of the Olmec ruins at La Venta. This includes a visit to the world-famous outdoor museum where there are megaliths of all sizes and shapes. We then head to Palenque in Chiapas and visit this jewel of the Maya Empire with Dr. Edwin Barnhart as our host. We'll be there for 2 days and then we head out to Bonampak, site of one of the largest murals left to us from the Maya classic period. For more information and details on this tour, go to earthancients.com/tours. And you'll see the entire itinerary in more details. This is a one-of-a-kind tour with Dr. Ed Barnhart and yours truly. For more information, earthancients.com/tours.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details. With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
I would say I have had a fascination with angels for a while, and I've always wondered, what are angels? Where do they come from? There's always a religious connotation when you speak of angels, and I guess that's a little bit of a problem for me. I'm not a religious person. I was raised a Protestant, and angels are discussed in the Bible, and the pastor and friends would talk about angels, but I guess I don't really know a great deal about them until now. My guest today has written a book on angels called The Ancient Tradition of Angels, The Power and Influence of Sacred Messengers. And we have with us today Norman D. Ellis. She is a prolific writer. I think we had her on a couple of years ago, maybe sooner, speaking on traditions in Egypt. But this is a very important book on a number of levels, simply because it doesn't simply get into the spiritual side of it and quote the Bible and give us a pathway into understanding them through biblical texts. It actually is much, much more serious than that, and it gets into historical references in different parts of the world on just how they perceive angels. And what makes this book also quite interesting is Normandy presents her own encounters with angels. So this is going to be a fun show. So, hey, Normandy, welcome back to Earth Ancients. Great to see you.
Great to see you, too. Thanks for having me back.
All right. You open the book, and I have to say, you present a story of your belief that an angel was there when your daughter was conceived.
Oh, yeah.
And I was thinking, really? and then I have to say that I had a similar situation, but it wasn't at the conception of my son, but at the time my wife and I were thinking of having a child, and it was very mystical and very strange, and it felt like there was a presence around us for a period of time. And then it's funny that, because I was reading reviewing your book again and thinking and going, wow, that kind of reminds me of my situation. Why did you think it was an angel?
What made me think it was an angel?
Yeah.
I guess I thought in retrospect it was an angel at the time. I just thought there was some vibration, some music that was following us through town. And, you know, at first I thought it was coming from one of the houses where we had passed on our walk, and it just kept following us. It followed us through the whole town.
Wow.
And it was beautiful. And I thought, where's that coming from? You know, and anyway, so that was the night that she was conceived. And it was later, sometime later, you know, I had a dream about angelic beings standing over this huge cauldron of the world and creating, I guess you would say, astrological constellations, like planets in square and planets conjunct and, you know, planets in this particular sign and so on. And I was helping them make this plate, you know, putting them all together. And the angels, I said, "Ooh, that looks like a really interesting chart. That person's going to like got some really big work to do." And the angels go, "Yeah, so jump in."
How funny.
So it was like I kind of put that dream of my own conception, I'll say, into what was happening with Elena. And I was hearing the music of the spheres, I think. I was just hearing these things moving around me, vibrations, tones. And that's what angels are to me. They are constructions of vibrations and tones and energies that move around us and take form.
I wanted to ask you, and you work with in traditions of various ancient people. You write about the initiation and traditions of the Egyptians and so forth and so on. Would you say that the incarnation of a physical being like yourself, like us here on Earth, is in one realm, and then the angelic realm is connected in some way? In other words, if we're on this physical realm, but we also have, if we understand our ancient spiritual roots, that there is a physical, and then there's these auric fields that are around us, and then perhaps there's other levels of consciousness that are written about. Do the angels fall into that area somewhere?
Yeah, I think they do. I think that I think it was Meister Eckhart who said that's all an angel is, an idea of God. You know, so it's a level of consciousness that expands down to us, because we are also levels of consciousness. Although we have free will, all light is a level of consciousness. So we and the angels are of the same, are kindred spirits in a way.
That's what it seems like. Yeah.
Yeah.
So on some level, we incarnate from a soul or spirit into a physical body. Where does the angel fall? How do we understand? Is there writing about the incarnation of an angel, or are they always present?
I believe they're always present, that each human soul has its own, what they would say in the East, Ishtadevata, their own personal angel, their own personal divinity that guards them and protects them. Hmm. It cannot keep us from exerting our own free will, but we don't always do what our angels want us to do, you know. And a lot of times we want to do stuff that's not good for us, so the angels will kind of try to manipulate things around so that that doesn't happen, you know, or give us the message, bad idea, you know. But I think it's, I think that they're a level of consciousness that is permeating the entire universe, all of them, and that they are like little If we could think of it on a molecular scale, they're like molecules and atoms that are part of a larger body.
Interesting. You know, it's funny because I was thinking you, in many ways, you've written a science of angels, the scientific approach to them, who they are, and in many ways, how they function in this book, the ancient tradition of angels. It's fascinating that the Bible is so filled with angelic contact, you know. was it that people at the time that the Bible was written, and of course it's gone through just various iterations and versions, was it that people were more sensitive to the angelic presence in the during the time of the figures of the Bible, or what?
Well, that's a good question. I mean, I'm sure it's because of a prevalence of a belief in angels that come to us through, like the Zoroastrians and folks like that, through the Egyptians. I wouldn't exactly say they called them angels, but they had spirit beings, winged spirit beings. Mm-hmm. And I believe the Jewish tradition was likewise, with many, many angels. You find so many more angels in the Old Testament than you do in the New Testament. And the reason for that, so I was told, was that Jesus was to become the fulfillment of the prophecies of the angels. And so there are fewer angels that are doing things, but he seems also to be surrounded by them at various times and in various stories.
Fascinating. Yeah.
Yeah.
Let's get into it. What is an angel? What, in your definition, where do they fall? We'll talk about what their function is, but what is an angel?
Well, I'll go back to what Meister Eckhart said. It's an idea of God. You know, it's God's idea. It's his messenger. It's a messenger that comes from the creator. So the great cosmic essence being, whatever you want to call it, you know, he, mm-hmm. she, him, it, they, maybe they, because in the Bible it says, God says, we have made them like us, when he's talking about people.
Yeah.
So maybe it's a they. But I believe that angels are the way that the universe communicates with itself. It's like they're messengers. But when you're sleeping, you have messengers in your sleep that come mm-hmm. to you. We don't always call them angels, but there are beings from the spirit world that come and tell us things and scare us away from certain paths. And So I think that's more or less what they are, that they're thought forms mm-hmm. that the body of God has created for us. We have to consider, stretch our minds a bit to consider that we are also the body of God, you know, that we are as much as the angels are. We are the body of God. We're particularly different species, because so they say we have free will and the angels do not. And the angels,
I read that
God,
in your book. I was like, why would the creator manifest a being or beings and not allow them to have free will?
Well, it's a good question.
There's something about the servitude. It's like, okay, you are an angel, and we're going to, in a second here, ask you about the function of an angel, but it's almost like you are in servitude to these physical beings on the planet of Earth. And so because you're in servitude, you're not allowed to have free will.
Right.
That's almost like what it's all about, but that's just curious.
We're God's science experiment.
Oh, that's really interesting. That's a fascinating fact, that we would be an experiment. What are the functions of an angel? What they are a creation of higher source.
They're made to worship God, to announce God's presence in the world. They're made as messengers, so to give us a clue as to what God's will might be in a particular area. And they are also, if God says, this is what I need to have happen, you know, like, sorry, Adam and Eve, but you got to leave the garden. The angels are going to, you know, take care of that as well. So they do three things, to my understanding.
Interesting. And, you know, we hear about the angel protectors, the angel messengers. There's even stories of warrior angels. I'm not sure. Mm-hmm. you probably know the specific names of these angels, but they all have names and personalities, it sounds like.
Right. There are like the 99 names of God, although there are many, many more than 99. They are each angel is an aspect of God. You know, it's mm-hmm. like God's fire, God's warmth, God's beginning, God's ending. You know, he's like, mm-hmm. yeah. So the angels have names that are healers, you know, that are all the capacities that we would need for angelic beings, you know, to help us keep Earth going.
Okay. So as a servitude being, would you say that they are assigned to individuals when you call on them, or are they assigned to groups like a family, or how do they function in terms of the servitude?
Well, I think it's hard for us who are physical entities to think of them as non-entities, but they are a conglomerate of energies. An angel is a conglomerate of energies, a conglomerate of consciousness. It's like the molecules that make up gold. There's more than one molecule. So you can have a molecule of gold, and I can have a molecule of gold, and it can still be the same gold and doing the same thing that gold does. So that's how the angels work. They're part of sort of like they're quantum is the best way to explain them. They're quantum.
Okay. It's fascinating. You mentioned a hierarchy of angels, and there's a number of famous biblical angels that like Michael and a whole series of names. If there's these major angels, what are they like? Overlords or demigodish, or are they like generals? How do we characterize these noted angels?
I think they've always been described as part of God's army, whatever that means, you know, because mm-hmm. we're used to thinking of it in that term. The hierarchical ways that they're looked at, I mean, I don't know that a hierarchy of top to bottom is the way that we should look at them. Because in that case, the archangels would be closer to the bottom than they would be to the top. But there are cherubim and seraphim and, oh my gosh, there's like nine levels of angels. Some are just whirling wheels of light. Some of them are eyes. You know, some of them have multitudinous wings, so they say, you know, 8 to 12 to 10. Some are burning, some are, you know, there's the thrones, the virtues, the, you know, I mean, I'm not all steeped up on my Catholic unless I'm reading it from a book, but there's a whole yeah. bunch of them, you know, seraphim, cherubim, the thrones, the virtues, the, and then down at the bottom, there's the archangels. And then the angels, just the regular day-to-day personal healing angels.
Fascinating.
So the archangels are they're the closest thing that we can identify as angelic, with wings and human form and, you know, that kind of thing. And whether that's what they look like or not, I have no idea.
You do mention that you've had a sense of them being in your presence, like flashes of light and perhaps a feeling or a pressure on your body, like they're touching your shoulder or something like that. The classic sense of an angel as a being in long swathing clothes and wings, is that a good approximation, or have there been over the centuries different views of them in terms of their appearance?
Well, there are different views and in terms of their appearance. Like the Islamic angels have more of a fiery aspect to them. Okay, they're more flame oriented. The devatas of the Eastern tradition don't really have wings, but they have these long flowing robes that just seem to float in the air, you know, and that's what carries them up. So again, it's a perception, you know, of how we see the angels.
Okay. Let's talk a little bit about their abilities. They seem to be, you know, somewhat demigodish in a way of being able to make things happen. They can be in a protective mode. What do we know about their abilities?
The stories that we have of angels that, I want to tell a story about Eliezer ben Judah of Worms. He was the Jewish rabbi that was kind of responsible for figuring out who all these angels were and was like a precursor to John Dee. Okay. So he had this angelic code of light that he would use to speak with angels. He would write them letters. He saw them all as part of gematria, you know, or numbers and geometry. And that's the way that he perceived them. And I'm going to just say those were his angels, you know. But he began to work with them to sort of influence events in a way, which is not necessarily what we should be doing with angels. You know, we shouldn't be trying to send them out to do our laundry or something. But he worked with these angels to take messages to God to do these certain things. And he was living in precarious times. His wife and his daughter were killed by the Christian crusaders who came into his home, and they, you know, they thought she had a lot of money and they burnt things down. And so anyway, he had these students, and the students who studied with him wanted to go to one side of town to meet this prophet. And they had to go through a difficult part of town. And Eliezer ben Judah said, don't do it. You know, it's too dangerous. And they said, no, we're going to go. We've got the angels with us. And he said, that's not what they're for. So anyway, they went and they used all the protections and the spells that they knew to keep the angels on their side. And they went and they were unharmed. And when they got back and they told the rabbi what they had done, he said, no, you cannot treat them that way. You cannot treat them as if they're your personal, you know, slaves. Your soul is meant to build and develop on its own. It's not for you to go and do just things that are harmful and then try to wiggle your way out of it. He said, so if you don't want to be in trouble with the angels, you have to go back there and go back there without the angels, right? So they said, okay. So they went back there without the angels, and they died.
Oh boy.
Yeah. It was like, oh. So I don't know if that was kind of a harsh lesson.
Yeah.
You know, but that's a story that they tell about how and why not to ask angels to do your bidding, you know, only not my will, but thine. That's how we approach the angels. And that's how the angels approach their role from God. You know, it's like, well, maybe I don't think it's such a good idea that you give these humans free will. But if that's what you want to do, we'll do whatever you want us to do, God. So I think there's sort of some correlation to those two stories.
That's a brutal lesson those people learned in accessing the angel realm. How would you say we're supposed to work with angels? Are we supposed to only have them come and give us inspiration as needed? Or is it more of you call in and we've had people on the program who apparently work with the angelic realm and they are called to help during times of distress, as you just your example shows. But in other cases, it could be people wanting to know what their angel name is. I think that could be a little too far. but, you know, in this day and age, a lot of things go. The so-called New Age movement, talk about abuse, you know, getting the angel to give you your angel name. I don't know what that's all about. But what do you say is a purpose in terms of what they can be? How do we interact with them?
Well, Edgar Casey used to summon angels. He summoned Michael. Michael was the one who came to him and gave him messages of healing and prophecy. And, you know, I think that was a good use of the angel.
Yeah.
You know, that was a wonderful use of the angel. And he had this large group of people who loved being with him and talking to Michael and talking about what Michael had to say about the future of the world. And then one time this angel came in named Haliel. It was an angel that was not invited, but was on the sidelines and you know, vetted, apparently. And he came in, and Edgar Casey started talking about visions of the end of the world. And the people said, no, we don't want to talk to that angel anymore. And he said, well, he's coming to tell you some information that you need to know. So, well, we don't want to talk to him anymore. And so Casey had to say, sorry, but they don't want to talk to you anymore. It's interesting.
Yeah, I remember reading that interesting bringer of bad news, in a way, angel. That's amazing. Was there any other communication with any angels? And Casey's a fascination of mine. So when you brought that out, I was thinking, wow.
Yeah, mine amazing. Too.
Did he have any other angels that communicated through him as a channel?
I believe that he did, but those were the two public ones that he worked with.
Okay.
Yeah, if that makes sense. Yeah. Of course, Rudolf Steiner, he had Michael, you know, come and work with Rudolf Steiner had. Him. He came and worked with his teachers. Michael came and taught through Rudolf Steiner to his Waldorf school teachers.
Wow.
And the first lesson that all the kids got when they came to school was draw a picture of Michael on the board because he's always there to protect you.
Yeah.
And so Michaelmas became a celebrated day, Michaelmas, September 25th.
Amazing. In your book, you explain that we have souls, we incarnate many, many times, but angels don't have souls. I find that an amazing, and it's almost like they are ever-present, ageless beings that, you know, are here on an unseen level, but they're still kind of around us. Talk a little bit about that, would you?
Okay, you know, and a lot of it's only going to be from my own poor understanding of what I think is going on there. I believe that we have souls because we are here to experience life that a formless being created for us so that he could understand. So that being could understand what life was. I mentioned before, it was like an experiment. Let's see what they do. Let's see what they know. Let's see how they respond to all of this. And so in a way, we live our lives and we have karmic responsibility for our thoughts. That's basically our thoughts before our deeds. But we have karmic responsibility for that. And so that is a way that God, we'll call, you know, the large being, comes to know itself, its possibilities, is through the choices that that the creations have made for it. Now, the angels are just created as, you know, the servants of, but we're the, like the foot soldiers in the life pattern.
But we're a part of God. We're a piece of God, and we have these godlike abilities to keep generating new lifetimes because we want to learn about this experience known as Gaia or Earth.
Mm-hmm.
And it's always been told to me that, you know, it's kind of like a college university, and we can go back and forth and experience lifetimes on Earth to have people around us to interact with. And that's just kind of a lesson. And what you're saying is that these angels are part of that in some way, which is interesting. They're there to kind of either be like umpires. I don't know if that's a good term, or more overseers to make sure that the lifetime script is fulfilled. Would that be a good assessment?
Yeah, that the lifetime script is fulfilled. Yeah, I think so. Of course, we have free will not to fulfill it.
Yeah.
But yeah, what would be the point in that?
We're going to take a short commercial break, and we will return quickly with our guest, Normandy Ellis, and her book, The Ancient Tradition of Angels. We'll be right back. Hey guys, after 3 years of restrictions, COVID-based problems, Contact in the Desert is back. It's back in Indian Wells, California. It's a suburb of Palm Springs, and it is an amazing world-class conference. From June 2nd to the 4th, you can hear people like Graham Hancock, A.V. Loeb, Linda Moulton Howe, and over 125 experts, scientists, and research investigators that will provide you with the latest information on a variety of topics. This is a chance to see your favorite author, meet with them personally, and spend a weekend hearing the latest from the greatest. For more information, go to contactinthedesert.com and get all the details. Be sure to stop by and see me. We'll be there recording, interviewing, and I'd love to hear from you. Contact in the Desert! June 2nd to the 4th. For more information, contactinthedesert.com. My guest today is Normandy Ellis, who has written a new book called The Ancient Tradition of Angels,
the power and influence of sacred messengers. And we're getting a sense of just what these biblical angels were all about and their function here on earth.
You know, it's funny because I'm just trying to, you know, we're talking on religious connotation, but you actually, in a minute here, I want to talk about these Yazidi
angels. Yeah.
Those are a fascinating type of angels. Let's talk for a little bit about the different kinds of angels or specific types that have appear to have quite a lot of ability. So what are they? The Yazidi.
And the Yazidis are, Yazad means God.
Right.
Okay. So in their language, so the Yazidis are a group of people who are fairly isolated. They live in Iran, Afghanistan, Iraq area. Now what we know is Mount Ararat around there. And they're fairly isolated. They are not Sufis, but they are a little bit like Sufis. They have a religion that is not written down. It's delivered mouth to ear. So they are not the people of the book. You know, they are different. They're divinely inspired and receive messages from the angels. And the big angel is named Tosmelek, who's a peacock angel. And he would be kind of like what we would think of as a Michael. He was in heaven and he came to earth. And he basically created all of the Yazidi people. They believe that they are descended from angels.
That's fascinating. And that's in their history, I guess, huh?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And the word that they have for angel is Melek. M-E-L-E-K. And, you know, I think that's why Hollywood gave Rami Malek, who was Freddie Mercury in the movie, he's a Yazidi who grew up in London. But I think they gave him the cold shoulder because he was a little odd. But I think that's fascinating. I think it's very fascinating.
And do these people regularly commune with the angel realm?
Oh, yeah. They are. They have these sheikhs who are called Shamsis. And they are embodiments, believe that they are embodiments, or at least partially embodying angels. And they stand up on the edge of the cliffs in the morning before the sun rises, and they sing the sun up. That's their job, is to sing the sun into rising every morning. And I think that that's connected to what we think of as Rumi's friend Shams was a sun singer. You know, we don't know much about Shams, but from what I can tell when I start reading about him and things that apparently he wrote, he probably was a Yazidi.
That's fascinating. Do you have a sense that this Yazidi group is perhaps a last descendant of perhaps earlier people, pre-flood people that had regular communication with the angelic realm? And I ask this question because you mentioned the ancient Hindus and that the fact that the Rig Veda mentions angels, and that's one of the oldest books in the world that we still have.
Right. The Yazidis are akin to, because they live so close to Mount Ararat, they're akin to Noah. Excuse me. And they are also descendants of Noah. And we know that his story is that he was told that there was going to be a big flood and to build the ark. And so he did. And that's where his ark landed. And that's where he got off. But he built it according to a book that has disappeared, a sacred book that was called the Book of Raziel, which is a book of angels.
Wow.
And a book of magic. It's the Book of Raziel has all kinds of things about numerology and astrology and gematria and angelic names and alchemy and also plant medicine and what kind of stuff would do what. And it was the story goes that the books were given to Adam. It was originally the Book of Adam that God gave to Adam as a consolation prize because he had been thrown out of the kingdom and Adam was so upset. So God said, okay, I'll teach you some of the secrets of heaven, but don't show the angels. Okay, so Adam has this book and the angels come to him and say, oh, Adam, what's in the book? And so he starts reading to him. And anyway, he gets in trouble and they take the book is taken away from him and he's thrown into the river up to his neck in water for, I don't know, thousands of years until he's all old and wrinkly. And finally, God feels sorry for him and gives him the book back. And it's handed down from to his sons, to their sons, to so-and-so until it manages to get into the hands of Noah. And after the flood, the story goes that the book disappears. So who knows about the book, the magic book,
Yeah.
But Noah and the people descended from Noah were supposed to be in touch with the angels that could understand and read the book.
Fascinating. You mentioned Genesis. There's an angel in Genesis that you write about, and I'm going to try to speak his name. Is it Taz Melek?
Yeah, that's the peacock angel.
Oh, that's the one you mentioned. Okay.
Yeah, that's the peacock angel.
And it must have been a fairly high-level angel just because of the function of his ability.
Right. He created all the sub-angels beneath him, like archangels beneath him, who embodied themselves into shakes later. So he's kind of like a Archangel Michael, but some people think that the Archangel Michael, the angel of light, is also Samael, who is Lucifer. So there's like this connection between those two that some cultures make. But the truth is, I have no idea.
It's fascinating. Let's talk about fallen angels. What are fallen angels? Are those truly angels who have not followed the guidance of the Lord and have fallen off the tree? Or is there some other indiscretion that they performed that got them in trouble?
I like your phrase, have fallen off the tree, because supposedly every angel's name is written on the leaves of the tree of life. And the ones that fell off were the falling leaves that fell off the tree. So that was good. That was a good one. Let's see. What are fallen angels? I can never wrap my mind around the fact that they're supposed to have no free will, and yet they willfully disobey God.
Yeah.
They say, I'm not going to help you make that human person because, they're going to be your downfall. They're going to be your trouble. And God says, no, I want you to go get me the clay and so I can make them. And even the earth angel, the Gaia angel, says, nope, I'm not going to give you my clay. Nope. They're going to be your downfall. They'll ruin the world. And God says, this is my great experiment. You'll do what I say. And it's the angel. I think Gabriel is the one that gets everything that is needed together to make mankind, which some say is the reason that he's so invested in being the primary messenger to humankind. Gabriel is the primary messenger angel. Because he agreed to put it all together, so he has to keep us all on the straight and narrow. So,
and when you say messenger, he's spoken about in, of course, the Bible and other scriptures. But does he come up, and you, I would think, as somebody who could see the signs of him, Gabriel, is he appearing in the works of certain individuals, like political leaders? Is his influence on with artisans of the day? Talk a little bit about what his influence might be.
Ooh, I don't know. That's such a really good question. I'm sure he's still making his influence felt. He seems, I would not be able to answer that question.
Okay. I was curious because, you know, the way you write and the details that you have in your book make me think that there are the influences of the angels, those voices in the back of our mind, the inspiration, the muse, as we call it, for the artisan people, even the inventors, the scientists have muses that come to them when they sleep or when they're daydreaming. And, you know, there's a story of Einstein kind of falling into a light sleep, and then he invented M square, you know.
Yeah,
M equals square. Or whatever.
Yeah. I think that those are angels. I think, in my opinion, Gabriel is the one who's doing most of the teleporting of information to humankind. Mm-hmm. He's the one who announces the births of Jesus and so on. But he's also the one who laid the green scarf into the lap of Muhammad and said, recite. You know, and that was the Quran. And it just, you know, sometimes when you're working as a writer, I know when I'm working, sometimes it doesn't feel like it's me. It's coming through me, but
channeling,
it's not me.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I don't know that I would say I'm channeling Gabriel, but there's some definite energy there that's helping me.
Yeah, and you have to wonder, does our unconscious work with the angelic realm to bring through information, inspiration, life-saving data, so forth and so on? Are we intricately involved with this angelic realm as part of humanity? I mean, that's what I'm curious about.
Well, I think so. You know, that whole thing about Lindisfarne in Scotland was because Dorothy MacLean and her husband, Peter, they got in meditative states. They got information. They were talking to the angels. And they told them, you know, dig here, plant these things. I mean, they were able to grow cabbages that were this big, you know. They were able to grow in places that, you know, was sand and seawater. And how could they do that? But the angels said, we'll take care of it. We'll figure it out. So they built this whole community at Lindisfarne that was based on that. And I think that's really fascinating. Now, they listen to their angels. Peter, what was his name? Peter. Oh, my goodness. I wish I could remember his last name. Anyway.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I'm curious because, you know, we're always wondering this, these other vibrational levels that are part of the human condition. And, you know, for those of us who are not religious and who don't read the Bible or the Quran or the Kabbalah and these other books of religious living, you know, that's where we're getting the information about the angels. But for those regular Joes, I guess for me, I'm thinking this realm.
Can I talk with angels?
Pardon me?
You're wondering, can I talk with angels?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. Is it a gift or are you considered as sensitive, or is this something that anyone can access?
Mary Oliver had this phrase that she said she has in one of her poems that says, "Only if there are angels in your head will you ever see or experience one." So they're already there. They're part of your consciousness. They have access to us because they're part of our consciousness, because in a very quantum way, we're made of light, as the angels are. And quantum mechanics tells us that no two things that have ever been together at any one time can be lost from each other, even across the expanses of the universe. We still have a connection. And so I think that's part of it.
The book's called The Ancient Tradition of Angels, The Power and Influence of Sacred Messengers. And I'm speaking with Normandie Ellis. Talk a little bit about this, the main fallen angel, Lucifer, and where he fits as a fallen angel, because he's supposed to be the one who suggests evil things and perverts us and turns people into zombies and stuff like that. I mean, I don't know how far it gets, but what is it about Lucifer?
He starts out as Samael. Did you ever see the show Lucifer on TV?
Oh, I love that show.
Netflix. I love it too. And I started looking at it through the lens of like, okay, is this correct? Is this correct? And a lot of it seems like it fit to what my understanding was. And I'll just quote the Lucifer on that show. He said, "I didn't make you do anything. I only punished you for doing it."
Oh, interesting.
And so I think that it's like, yeah, that's pretty interesting. Yeah.
So is he one of the ones that decided to go against the God and not follow directions? And then he was banished from the higher levels of their dimensions?
Yeah, he was the one who said, "I do not want to participate in making of humans, because they're just going to come to no good end, you know, and I'm not going to do it. And you can't make me do it." And so God cast him out, you know, and when God said, okay, you got to go to the farthest ends of the universe, he and his other angels at the farthest ends of the universe, so the story goes, look down and they see humanity and they say, okay, we're going to come down there and see what they're up to. So that's where we have the whole stories of the fallen angels and the Nephilim and, you know, Nephilim, that kind of
light.
Thing.
Yeah.
Right. So, and I don't know whether I believe Nephilim were the children of angels or ancient aliens.
It gets confusing if you follow the Bible too quickly and then you read Zechariah Sitchin's work, because the Nephilim are ETs, according to him. So,
yeah.
Talk about angels who can become embodied, physically embodied. Is this something that happens rarely, or is this something that happens only with great effort?
Well, maybe we would have to ask an angel to really tell us how frequently that happens. But there are stories that, you know, the story in the Bible of Tobias and Tobit, where there was Gabriel appears as a man who walks with this young boy who's being taken to marry this woman. She's been married 7 times, and every time she marries someone, the person dies, and his father doesn't want him to go, but the angel says, no, he's got to go. You know, God wants him to go.
Yeah.
So he's walking with this boy, and they think she's a spider woman, but the truth was that the men got sick. The land that they were living on was poisoned at some point. So the angel tells her, you know, go ahead and marry him and we'll take you to some different place, and they live happily ever after, you know. But the angel came not just as a person to walk him along the road, but as a healer. And it was, they say, Gabriel. And he healed the sorrow in the young woman's heart by bringing her someone to love. He healed the loss in the young man's heart so that he could find someone to love. And he healed the doubt and disappointment in the grandfather, the old man, who said, no, no, it'll never come to any good. So anyway, he was a healer, but he just appeared as a person walking along the road, assisting him along the path. So, Adam, Abraham eats with these three angels, you know, before Sodom and Gomorrah, and they eat and drink and, you know, talk just like men. They don't have wings or anything, but they're bringing in messages from God, you know, and said, you need to get the heck out of here, you know.
Do you think that happens in our current age, where an angel will manifest into some physical form to be among us and maybe provide information or communicate when needed?
I do. I think I've met one. I was in Egypt, and I wasn't used to finding my way around all these different places. And I found this image of Isis that I wanted at this store.
Statue of some kind.
Statue, yes. Oh. And I went back for it, and everything was closing, and bought the statue. And then after I had done that, all the shops were being shuttered. And I couldn't, and the lights were going out, and I couldn't figure out where I was. I didn't know where my hotel was. I was by myself. And I feel someone behind me walking.
Oh, boy.
Along behind, like they were going to take my wallet and probably me. And so I kept crossing the street, and they would cross, and I would take a different alley, and they would take that same alley. And I kept trying to get my way back, and I was totally and completely lost and frightened. Beyond anything I'd ever felt before. And this little carriage comes around, you know, horse and buggy comes around the corner. And there's a young boy in it. And he appears in the streetlight, and he's just all bright in the streetlight. And he says, "Lady, your hotel is that way." And I was like, "Thank you." And I run toward the hotel, and sure enough, there it was. And then I stop after I'm in the lobby and go, "How did he know where my hotel was? I don't know that guy from Adam. I never saw him. I never, you know." So I do believe he was an angel.
I love that story. Yeah, you have that in your book. What angel would you say is the most influential for you? I mean, do you read back into the Bible? Do you read about specific events that were that included angels that were impressed you, or what angel would you say is the most important for you?
I have two. The angel that helps me with my studies, Raziel. Okay, as a metaphysician, I call on Raziel to help me understand numerology, astrology, metaphysics, physics. You know,
and how do they help you? Is it comprehension and absorption of data?
Yeah, it's just when you're reading something and you say, "I don't get this."
Oh, yeah.
You know? And so then you fall into a dream and you wake up and you go, "Oh, I get it." You know, like that.
Okay.
So, yeah, I think that's an important angelic being for me. But the other one that I'm getting very fond of lately is Peniel, who's the angel that wrestled with Jacob. So they say it's the angel that wrestled with Jacob on the cliff. And, you know, he threatened him, like, let me go, tell me your name, that kind of thing. And Peniel is an angel who saves us from our own human stupidity. Boy, can I use that. You know, he saves us from our own stupidity. And who was more egoic and selfish and manipulative than Jacob, taking his brother's wives and his cattle and his land and, you know, taking them to another place where he'd never find them. And then finally, the day that he had to confront his brother, he's standing on that cliff before the sun came up, wrestling with this angel. He couldn't tell if it was a man or, a giant or an angel. And it turns out it was an angel Peniel.
Oh, boy. So that angel incarnated, and so he was wrestling. Wow.
Yeah, yeah.
What a story. Real fun speaking with you. This book just came out, The Ancient Tradition of Angels. I just saw it came out March 7th. And so those of you listening, it's available on Amazon, I'm sure, local bookstore. It's produced by Barron Company, which is distributed by Simon & Schuster. Normandy, do you have a website people can go and check out?
I do. I am so easy to find. NormandyEllis.com.
Oh, my God. That's
Normandy
very easy.
With an I.
Yeah. Yeah. And do you have updates on where you'll be speaking?
I do. All my books are there, all 14 of them. All the places I'll be doing talks, I try to keep it updated. It seems like things change all the time.
Yeah.
But wherever they can catch me. Yeah.
Great.
It's there.
Yeah. Isn't it nice that the conferences are starting up again because they were all pretty much closed for 3 years, the pandemic.
Yeah. Yeah. It is good.
Yeah. So, last question. How do you think people should approach an angel if they would like to communicate? Do you have any suggestions for that?
Yeah. My way, I'll tell you my way. I like to get into a quiet place, usually in the evening, light a candle and say, I invoke light into this place. I invoke the highest beings of intelligence to come and speak with me and to put their arms around me and show me what I need to see. Usually works.
Okay. And if you're not necessarily a sensitive person and can get a sense that there is a presence, what would you say is another acknowledgement of an angelic being in your presence? Would it be a flicker of light or a knowledge of it? Or what would you say would be a helpful guide?
A flicker of light is good, but also don't ignore the fact that the angels will give you synchronicities. You know, things will come to you in threes. You'll be thinking about something and then the answer appears. And the more often you say, it's not a coincidence, thank you, spirit, the more often it happens.
Oh, interesting. That's so interesting. Synchronicities of three.
Mm-hmm.
That's like a divine number, I guess.
Yeah.
Wonderful. Normandy, real pleasure as always, and much luck on this new book. I love the cover. They did a great job on this cover.
Didn't they do a bomb cover? I love that.
Yes.
Thank you. I didn't have anything to do with that. But boy,
I was just going to say, hopefully you didn't have to pound the pavement too hard to get them to do this, because it's a beauty.
It is a beauty.
Yeah, wonderful.
Thank you so much for having me.
Always a pleasure. It's really interesting to note that we forget so much when we incarnate, and we talk about lifetimes here on the program, and the Hindu traditions of understanding and working with reincarnation, karma, and, working with our ancestors, Day of the Dead, and, meditating. Now, a lot of people don't meditate. They think it's a waste of time, and we're not indoctrinated into these sacred traditions that are worldwide, in the ancient parts of the world.
we're too busy. We don't want to sit still. But I got to tell you, when you begin to meditate, a whole bunch of changes take place, not only physically, but through your brain and through spiritual connections. You can meditate, and there's actual techniques where you can connect with etheric beings, working with different dimensions, so forth and so on. As crazy as that sounds, they're beginning to validate this type of connection. And it just makes sense that at some period in our history, perhaps pre-diluvian, pre-flood, and sprinkling after that period, that we were trained to work with the higher realms. And within the higher realms, there's the angelic realm. And, you know, who are these beings? I was a little unsatisfied with some of the content of this program, because I wanted to know where these beings come from. You know, what is the etheric? How many levels of dimensions are there? Is it infinity? You know, you know, or if you're religious, where's heaven? Where's heaven located? And within that realm of heaven, where do the angels fall? I know some of you biblical scholars listening are going to go, well, if you go here and then you go there and then you have to say hi to Michael, and Michael hears your story, and then he assigns an angel to you, you know. I think it's amazing that they don't have free will. We have free will. They don't. That's servitude. And that's perhaps why Lucifer got sick of it and said, I'm doing my own thing. And then he was banished. Oh, man. All right. Anyhow, that was kind of fun. Interesting to know. And that book just came out, The Ancient Tradition of Angels. And you can get it on Amazon. So something to consider. If you are a fan of Earth Ancients, you know that we do tours every year, and we got a fun one coming up in November. It's our Maya of Tabasco and Chiapas tour. It's November 10th to the 17th. And this is a new tour for us because we are hosted by Dr. Edwin Barnhard. He is going to be showing us what's going on. We'll have some lectures from him. And I'm excited about this one because I've not had a chance to go to La Venta, which is one of the oldest cities of the Olmec. And not only are we going to see the ruins of the Olmec, but we're going to go to this outdoor museum that's noted for its megaliths. And when I say megaliths, these are granite blocks weighing between 5 and 50 tons, intricately carved in the figures and other characters, thousands of years old, you know, at least 3,000 years or older. And they're just amazing. I just can't wait. Plus, this is one of the locations that has the largest collection of these heads. They think they're ruler heads, but they have helmets on. There's even some suggestion that they have some technology here and there. All that is the first day that we're in Vera Hermosa, which is real close to La Venta. Next day, we get on a bus and we head south to Chiapas and the grand city of Palenque. I've never been there. Really looking forward to that. And, you know, Ed was a major figure in mapping Palenque about 20 years ago. So we're going to hear about that. And then the second day we're there, we're going to get a private tour of the off-limits stuff, the pyramids, the buildings, the temples that have not been excavated. We're going to hear all about that from him. And then we're going to go to a couple of other places. It's like 6-7 different locations, including these world-class museums that very few people go to. And those are the real diamonds in the rough, because there are figurines holding technology. There are all kinds of wonderful items to check out. November 10th through the 17th. For more information, go to earthancients.com /tours. Look for the Mexico banner. Click it. You'll see the entire itinerary. We're half full. We're only taking 30 people. And all you got to do is get $500 in to hold your space. And then you can pay the rest in a couple of payments. EarthAngents.com/tours. Come on, join us. Hey, I'm really excited. We just confirmed Dr. John Brandenburg. John has been ill and has been moved around. He went dark on us, Jesus, last year. And I found out that he was working on a hush-hush project for a contractor to NASA. But he has agreed to spill the beans. He's a friend. This is a program. It's called Confessions of a NASA Scientist. This is all about death on Mars, the civilization that once existed there tens of thousands of years ago, and new evidence from not only the satellite array that's there, but some rover footage that has not been exposed to the general public. This is a tragedy befallen the United States citizens. We pay billions of dollars to NASA to give us the true story of these planets that are in our cosmos. And we're told there's no form of current or past life on the planet Mars. Mars is bustling, not only with ancient ruined cities, but we think there could be life forms that are still there. We don't know if they're a form of Homo sapiens sapien or other creatures, but there are life forms there. But what's really maddening for me is the continual exposure of ruins through satellite imagery, the evidence of a horrific event. Dr. Brandenburg will give us details on this event. He believes it was a nuclear event. And what is happening now with SpaceX and other NASA Space Command projects. It's looking like, and by the way, there's some new writings by people who are having contact with ETs, most notably Whitley Strieber. He just published a book called Them, T-H-E-M. And in that book, he describes what's going on with NASA. And it's just a continual lie to cover themselves, because it's looking more and more like they're going to be humiliated with other countries landing probes and orbiting satellites around Mars and the information coming back. And so at some point they're going to have to come clean, but who knows? Anyhow, this is a special program, Confessions of a NASA Scientist. It's going to be in May. We're recording it ahead of time. I'll be in Egypt when it airs, but it is going to be a beauty. And he is a lot of fun because he's just flat out an open book. He has told me that there are a few things he cannot discuss, most notably the current lineup of Mars missions that are coming up. So we won't go there, but he's agreed to kind of give us the lowdown of what he knows and what's being covered up. And it's just inexcusable. I'm just really tired of it. So can't wait for that. All right. Dr. John Brandenburg is coming your way. All right. That's it for this program. I want to thank my guest today, Norman D. Ellis, and her new book, The Ancient Tradition of Angels. As always, the team of Ruth Thomas, Mark Foster, and everyone who makes this podcast happen. Thank you. I appreciate it. All right. Take care. Be well. And we will talk to you next time.